Alright, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Hope you guys are all right. We've got a episode today, just a quick one really, although it's not actually that quick, it's about 40 minutes, but relatively quick for me, where I've just caught up with our good friend Richard Bowes. I've also talked to him about The Verve, because he's got a book coming out about The Verve that we talk about, but today what we're going to do is just focus on the news, because I wanted to get this one out to you pretty quick, because there's been a lot of news going on. And also a review of the new Alan McGee Creation Stories film that we've both seen. So I wanted to get our views on that. So that's what we're going to be doing today. Bit of a news catch-up and a review of Creation Stories. Come back very soon for more fun and games, including The Verve breakdown of their run-ins with Oasis and Don't Look Back in Anger breakdown part two, and Eddie Temple Morris, and a couple of other things. It's all good. Loads of stuff going on. We're going to keep them coming thick and fast. But for now, here is me talking to Richard about Creation Stories.
Jesus and Mary, cheer!
Give it up for Oasis!
Who is Alan McGee?
Alan McGee!
Let's rewind.
I'm going to be a millionaire one day.
Thank you, Glasgow. Good night.
All right. With those out of the way, welcome back to the Oasis Podcast. Richard Bowes, how are you doing?
No, I'm all right, mate. How are you?
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm good. I thought a few bits going on, and I thought there's only one person that I can check in with them about it, and I'm not even going to do that crap joke about saying, oh, and then they weren't free. So yeah, and you've got some cool news as well, haven't you? So you've got it's been announced today on the 22nd, it's available for pre-order. You're a multiple book author now.
Yes, yeah, who would have thunk it? Yeah, so basically I have a new book coming out within a couple of weeks. I'm not sure the exact date. I think it's going to be the 2nd or 3rd of April. It'll be 2 weeks from today, so 5th or something like that. Yes, I've joined the Modern Music Master series to do a book on The Verve. As you know, it was brought to my attention that in this series of Modern Music Masters books, which for those who don't know, they're a series of short books based around all 90s bands. So far in the series, they've done Oasis, Blur, Pulp, Manic Street Preachers, and then my book is the 5th, The Verve. It was brought to my attention that some might say it's a nod in the foreword for the Oasis book. So I reached out to the guy, obviously a former guest of yours, Tom Boniface Webb, to kind of thank him for the thanks. And then he asked me if there's anything I fancy doing, and yeah, I thought I'd always wanted to do a book. Well, I love The Verve, so I thought I wanted to do a book on them, because obviously they have quite a similar, they've crossed over the Oasis quite a lot, so I know a fair amount about them just through that. And also there was in January, well, as Christmas was around, obviously became pretty obvious that we were going to be doing another lockdown. So I kind of thought to myself, well, may as well give myself a project to use my time, stop myself going up the wall, and managed to knock it out between Christmas and, well, just finished the last draft of it yesterday, and yeah, it's good to go. Book two.
Brilliant. That is awesome, man. And because Tom did he came on here. We did the episode about Blur and Oasis, didn't we? And it was really good, actually. I got a lot of really positive feedback on that one. And so it's cool. It's a cool little series that. And I think the Mannix one's been very successful. And so, yeah, we'll see the Verve one. Sure, it would do brilliantly. I know there's a lot of fans listen to this, and so I think what we're going to do today is, you've now suddenly very clued up on The Verve, and as you said, there is a lot of crossover between The Verve and Oasis over the years, so we were just going to cover off kind of the run-ins that Oasis and the Verve have had over the years, and just talk about the Verve a bit. So I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, cool. And there's a lot of them. I kind of discovered I've literally just thought of one today that I've completely forgot about. In one of them, I didn't cover it in the Verve book. I might have done it in the Oasis one, but I can't remember. I didn't like. Yeah, there's so many little tidbits, and they say crossing over. So we might not cover all of them, but there's lots to get through, definitely.
Cool. All right, good. But before we get into that, it's been a busy old week, having had a few dry kind of weeks of news. Not much has really been happening. We're still waiting for this Noel single. Like, you know, we know he made a video with Matt Smith in London a couple of weeks ago now, and it's like, where is it? You know, come on, Noel, where's the new single? What's going on? But and by the sounds of it, he's still recording quite a lot. You know, the latest Matt Morgan podcast came out. I know you've had a chance to listen to it. It sounds like he's doing quite a lot in the studio at the moment. But it sounds like what he was saying is it's mainly like just the demoing and writing sort of phase. So it doesn't sound like, I mean, maybe if this one single is ready, but I think the main overall, whatever this next project is going to be, probably sounds a bit further down the line at the moment.
Yeah, but then it's hard to really... I don't know, the way kind of Noel was talking, like there wasn't any acknowledgement of this video that he's done. There was nothing about it at all. And he was playing almost too coy, I think. I don't know. I had a feeling that he was being a little bit too guarded, which leads me to think there might be something sooner than he's making out. But, you know, he gave no deadlines at all. But I think he's at least at the stage where, I don't know. He kind of contradicted himself a few times. Like, it was one stage he was saying, yeah, I've just hit a good run of form. Next minute he's saying, I'm demoing. It just didn't quite add up to me. I think he was very aware that perhaps he didn't want the news to break on the Matt Morgan thing. But it's a little bit frustrating, obviously, that we're not getting any answers from it. But I'm sure it'll come in due time. I mean, if the video's been done, unless he's doing what sometimes they do, and that's they do all the videos at once at the very beginning. But even so, that was presumably the video for the first single. So. Yeah, I don't think it's as far away as he's making out.
Interesting. And the and this will be filmed, and this new album or whatever it's going to be is actually in his new studio. So this is going to be the first proper album, like post. Obviously, we had that David Holmes stuff, and then the one-off tracks and the one-off EPs we had last year. But this will be like the new fruits of actually this new studio he's got, which is. Yeah, it should be exciting. And by the sounds of it, I don't know whether he's sort of been giving mixed messages on what it sounds like, as he always does. But, you know, possibly a return to kind of old-fashioned songwriting. And maybe because he's been locked away in lockdown, might be a bit more contemplative, might be a bit more kind of alone on the rope and Talk Tonight style rather than Black Star Dancing, maybe. Keep the punters happy. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think... From what we can make out of We're Going to Get There in the End, from the demo of that, I mean, I think I might have missed it. I think I stopped paying attention for a second. And he and Matt Morgan were talking about a demo he'd been sent that will sound completely different. I can't remember if they actually specifically said it was the We're Going to Get There in the End, or perhaps another one that Noel had sent to Matt Morgan. But yeah, it seems that from what he was saying, it seems to be, it's going to be more guitar driven than the last batch, you know, who built the new group. Remember the dream that you're keeping alive. Remember your love for the loved outside. Don't fight the feeling. Don't stop believing what you know. Cause you can't let go, my friend. We're gonna get there in the end. But yeah, you're right. You take whatever it is he actually says with a pinch of salt in terms of what it's going to sound like, because yeah, it never quite happens. But yeah, it'd be certainly interesting to see if he does like a balance of, as you say, the contemplative stuff and the guitar stuff with a few more of the cosmic pop. If he just does a complete vault face and just goes back to what he's known for, but I don't think he'll do that now. I think it'd be weird for him to be so heartened by what he'd done by experimenting, you know, in as much as Noel experiments, to then go back to what he'd had before and try and, you know, potentially placate the fans who weren't so keen on it. It'd certainly interesting to see what he does. I mean, essentially it would still be within that Noel Gallagher's, you know, frame, won't it? I don't think so. I think he's gone as experimental as he's going to, I would suspect. But, you know, who knows? Maybe he'll prove me wrong. But yeah, it feels like it's been a long time. Maybe it's because we've been in lockdown for the last year, and, you know, like the Blue Moon Rising EP came out literally like around about as we were going into lockdown. But obviously, you know, Who Built the Moon was, what, nearly 3.5 years ago now.
Wow. Yeah.
So yeah, it feels like it's been a hell of a long time. So yeah, hopefully, personally speaking, it'd be much needed, I think.
No, absolutely. And didn't they use the word shimmering? I think shimmering, I think Matt Morgan used. But then Noel said, no, well, it will sound completely different by that from the time it actually comes out. So we shall see. One of the other things that they talked about on that podcast, which was big news, and it was quite nice, this, because when, you know, like, it annoys me often that, you know, that Matt, I don't think necessarily keeps on top of these stories, or whether or not he does, but then he doesn't want to put it to Noel because he, you know, thinks he, you know, maybe he's texting beforehand and say, oh, I'm not going to talk about that because I don't want to, you know, feed the machine. But, you know, in this case, we had a news story, which, if people aren't aware, 24th of February, I think it was, a new company was incorporated. It got picked up by The Sun and a few other places that, you know, obviously must just keep an eye on, you know, just search for people's names every now and then and just check what companies are registered with, you know, because you have to register a company. If you set up a limited company, you have to register it. And you can search on Companies House, various websites, and you can find it. And so when if you look on, like, you can find all the different companies, like Definitely Maybe Touring Limited, and you can see all the different companies on there. But yeah, so you can see that a new company was set up called Cosmic Kite Limited with K's. The directors being Liam and Noel, and the secretary being Alex McKinley, who is basically the boss of Ignition these days. You know, people talk about Marcus Russell, but my understanding is Marcus has kind of stepped back a lot now, semi-retirement, and I think he wasn't in great health as well. But yeah, so I think Alex is the main guy now at Ignition. And yeah, and the company is listed as Motion Picture Development. So it's something to do with a film. Now, the things that jump to mind for me, so number one, there's some sort of collaboration happening here. There must have been paperwork flying around between Liam and Noel, whether or not they've been in a room together, you know, probably not. But some meetings have been happening and some decisions have been made, and a business has been set up with those three parties involved. So that's number one. Number two, well, what is it? Motion picture activity. Well, the official Oasis account and the official Oasis website have been asking for Nebworth Memories for a project. So we know there is a Nebworth project coming, whatever that's going to be. So that would be the obvious thing for me. But then, could it be a biopic? Could it be something else? And Liam then did tweet as well, didn't he? They're going to put me in the movies, which is a quote from the Beatles song Act Naturally. And I also saw there was a reply he did. I think someone said, you're going to be in a film with Noel. And he said, no, he's going to be a film with me, or something like that. So, yeah, very interesting. But then Noel, he just tried to fob it off, didn't he? Like, oh, yeah. Well, it's, you know, well, when you're part of Oasis, it's massive. There's loads of paperwork going on all the time, blah, 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 blah. And he was very quick to kind of dismiss it. And Matt didn't sort of follow up on it at all.
Yeah, it was blatant. Well, once again, it was blatantly Noel being a little bit too coy. And as you say, kind of trying to make it about something else, like, you know, slagging off the mainstream press by, like, you know, all the press have found one bit of news that's true and they've gone run with it, yada, yada, yada. I mean, from what he was saying, I think the biopic can be written off. It doesn't sound like it's going to be that sort of thing they'd sign off on. It's got to be Nebworth, hasn't it? I think everything seems to point that way. We know that, you know, Jill Furman obviously has got the book coming out later in the year as well. Obviously, it's 25 years. Yes, yeah, all leads to that. I can't think what else it would be, unless maybe it's, you know, they've agreed something with Matt Whitecross, and you know they're doing a second Supersonic, or you know, whatever it would be called. But my gut would say it would be Nebworth. I hope I'm wrong.
So it'll be interesting with Nebworth. I think that obviously the stumbling block that we've had for a lot of stuff. Of the Alan White years, you know, so we've always had, you know, definitely maybe they've been pretty much able to put out everything because all of the parties involved have been happy to, or legally they were, you know, whatever the setup was. Whereas we've had a lot less from the Alan White years. And notably in the Supersonic film, you know, it was a little Easter egg extra that Gwigsy had sort of written this letter in saying he didn't want to be involved. But Alan White actively refused to have his image, you know, on it. So you can see all the footage of Nebworth. You can hardly see Alan White. You know, you might catch little glimpses of the side of his face or whatever. So this is going to be very interesting whether or not if they are doing a Nebworth film, because that's always been the concern. It's like, well, how can you make a Nebworth? How can you put out Nebworth if you can't show the drummer and if Gwigsy's refusing to have his image as well, if you can't show the bass player? I mean, it would just be bizarre. Like, what, they're just not there. So you know, so it will be interesting as well whether or not, with Alan having resurfaced last year with these little videos he does and also replying to comments, you know, he replies to comments by Liam and Bonehead and things like that. So it feels like he's maybe stepping back into the Oasis world a little bit, but whether or not that's just because he's team Liam and, you know, and if they were allowed to do gigs, he would have come on stage with them. And then basically he's still like anti Noel and anti Ignition, and therefore he wouldn't allow his likeness to be on the Nebworth. So it's a very interesting, set of various issues going on there, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But then I think money would eventually talk, wouldn't it? I think in that instance. And yeah, it's good that he's kind of back within the, as you say, Alan White's making, you know, or he's put his head above the parapet essentially. And he's big mates with Gwigsy, isn't he? Apparently Gwigsy's the one he speaks to the most, I believe. Have I seen him comment on that or something on Instagram?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they said, oh, I speak to Gwigs every day or something crazy like that.
So that's interesting as well, if for the essentially for the Nebworth thing. I would imagine that money's probably talking, and this is probably a bit different than maybe going to do a big hoopla of it, maybe even an audio release, you know, to make it a big package. Although I don't believe Noel's particularly happy about the sound quality of Nebworth, but then we know he's gone back and listened to it quite a lot for various other things, doesn't he? Yeah, there have been subtle hints that he's mentioned about, you know, looking at the Nebworth footage about a year ago. Maybe it'd be a combination of, like I say, maybe a few, like the Nebworth gig, but then maybe a few supplementary interviews, like in the vein of Supersonic, but based around Nebworth, something like that. To which, you know, Alan White is maybe unlikely Gwigsy, I would think, but maybe Alan White's been called out of, you know, always been. Has agreed to take part in interviews.
Somebody suggested that the next thing we should do should be these things at Nebworth. They didn't really have much significance to me. But, you know, somebody's only got a whisper in my ear. Oh, these are the biggest gigs of all time. And I guess, well, that's me, yeah. Thank you, you've just sold it to me. Thank you very much.
Do you know, over 4% of the population applied for tickets for Oasis. 4% of the population.
You know, everyone was taking a big leap of faith that we were going to sell these shows out. And the first one, I think, went on sale. And it, like, sold out in, like, minutes.
As if by magic, the sun's got his hat on.
You know, as we get closer to August and the anniversary of Nebworth, I mean, you'd think they'd be trailing it already, you know what I mean? Like Jill's book has been trailed already. You know, they're cutting a bit fine if they're only just asking for, you know, I can't remember when it was, it wasn't that long ago they started asking for memories, only a few weeks ago. So it all feels like it's coming together, but it feels like a bit of a rush.
Yeah, but then I think wasn't the Rockfield thing quite last minute as well, the 25th of the Morning Glory celebrations? I know that was obviously a lot less to put it together, was, you know, it was just a documentary of all it needed was Noel to get on a train. But my memory is that was quite moved quite quickly. Maybe it's a twin thing with Main Road as well. You know, we all, you know, they regard Main Road, well, they said a lot of people, common perception is that Main Road was their best ever gig. Maybe it's something we could be slightly off piece, and maybe something around that. But then obviously if they're doing that, that's next month. So you, using your logic, they'd have to get something out pretty pronto. Although they can probably claim the money for it at any point in the year. Do you know what I mean? Like they could probably do a Christmas release when they're worth. It doesn't have to be in August, does it?
Sure. No, it's... All right, well, it'll be interesting. But yeah, as I say, Noel's fobbed it off pretty much in that interview, but we shall see.
Have you got your sister's makeup on? If I see much as hear you mention those sexy pistols, you'll wish you were never born. You look ridiculous!
Have you ever even been to London? Do you know anyone there?
No, I can be whatever I want to be in London.
It's good to have a dream.
Are you sure about him?
We need more dreamers in this family.
Do you have any more bands on your label?
Label?
I knew we could take over the world.
I have a dream. We're going to be bigger than you two.
Big day tomorrow.
It's fine. I'm all I'm doing.
At this rate, how long can we survive?
Alan, we're already dead. Now could things get any worse?
Bailiffs!
Bailiffs!
Oh, man.
No. We've got a band called the Bailiffs.
The other big interesting thing in the world of Oasis is we had the release of Creation Stories. So this is the film based on Alan McGee's life, directed by Nick Moran, who's the main actor in Lock, Stock, and produced by Danny Boyle and written by Irvin Welsh, and with Dean Kavanagh, and starring Ewan Bremner, Spud from Trainspotting. So it was very much a Trainspotting reunion with a couple of Lockstock guys in there as well. So Jason Fleming turned up briefly as well, didn't he? So very much a best of British cinema of the kind of 90s, 2000s. And then talking about the guy who dominated, music. You got to watch this. I only watched it this weekend when it arrived on Sky. But you watched it via the Glasgow Film Festival thing, didn't you? And reviewed it.
I did, yeah. I mean, there was nothing clandestine about it, or it wasn't privy to it. I just saw that the tickets were on sale and bought them. I thought you and I have had this conversation. I just assumed it was, you know, you could do that and it would be relatively easily available because it was a stream. But other people weren't quite so lucky in getting it. So yeah, I saw it a few weeks ago. I did watch it. I rewatched it again over the weekend because I wanted to watch it again, obviously. I mean, it's funny though, isn't it? Because there's British cinema royalty in all the people you mentioned, but I think it gets most from 24 Hour Party People. I think it's very much in that vein. I mean, frankly, it's not as good because that's a seminal film, but it's very much kind of, you know, obviously the subject matter about the guy who sets up a record label is very similar, and the anarchic bands and the historic bands that kind of come through the door. But it's very much kind of in line with that. I think if you're a fan of 24 Hour Party People, this is definitely be right up the street. And I really enjoyed it the second time as well. I was able to keep up with it a little bit more because it's the first half of the film especially moves at such a pace that you miss quite a lot, and before it kind of settles down into the second half. But I was able to pick up and also spot some of the cameos that I missed the first time around because it's crammed with them. And some, I remember reading some things afterwards thinking, I mean, Paul Gallagher, I missed Paul Gallagher the first time around.
I saw Paul Gallagher mentioned on social media that he's in there. Who was he? Where was he?
You get a brief little shot of him when they are. He's basically a guy sitting at the bar. I think it's before McGee goes in to meet with a bank manager. I think it is, or goes in to meet with a guy from the big label, not Sony. I think it's BGM or something. Yeah. They're in the pub, and it's just literally you just get a shot of Paul Gallagher, and then it kind of cuts to McGee, the character of McGee, having a conversation with Dick. And there's another one, Gary Powell, you know, the drummer from the Libertines. He's then at the very end. I mean, I spotted Carl Barrett with makeup on, but I didn't clock Gary Powell as well. And with Bez as well, Bez turns up when you expect him to. there's so much going on, and yeah, definitely rewards a few listens. But I mean, what did you think?
I really enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed it. I think it sort of charges along at a pace. It's sort of a funny one, because how do you judge it, right? Do you judge it like just I just tried to watch it without trying to worry too much about, you know, well, is this an accurate representation of this or what it could have been? And just sort of tried to watch it for, you know, a really cool, fun film about an interesting guy in the music industry who's had this interesting life, you know, and took away from the fact that I actually know the guy a bit and like and that I followed a lot of this stuff. It didn't annoy me. Like, I think that's like a major thing that I think a lot of like the I was reading like a piece that Irvin Welsh wrote where he was like, you know, we want this to be the antithesis of like Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocket Man, these sort of, you know, very kind of cheesy, although I think Rocket Man's a bit more interesting because it's sort of done in that sort of magic realism way. But, you know, like the, in Bohemian Rhapsody, when they're like, hey, I was thinking we could write a song that the fans could do. And then let's, you know, and then they come up with We Will Rock You. And it's just like, oh, come on, this is so cheese. And there's, you know, so you sort of avoid that. And obviously with the drug taking and the, it's so buzzy and fast and fun. I did laugh out loud at a couple of times. I did find it quite moving at a couple of times. I thought Ewan Bremner was brilliant. Had so much energy as McGee. I mean, I don't know, you know, I know McGee a little bit. I've met him a few times now in, you know, I think he's 60. Whereas like you know, I never knew McGee in the 70s or 80s or 90s. You know, I just remember seeing him on TV bits. So I've got no idea whether, you know, whether it's an accurate representation of him. But, you know, you have to think it's sort of, you know, it's not an impression. It's just he's sort of capturing the vibe, really, is how I kind of thought of it. But, I mean, I think that the elephant in the room, as this is the Oasis podcast, is the portrayal of Oasis.
Every now and then, a band comes along that changes your life.
Like to welcome to the stage, Oasis.
You had one of the biggest bands in the world. Where does it go from here?
Call it what it was. It was a breakdown.
I was okay with it because I thought, look, you know, like McGee, like we're saying, it's someone I know, right? I know exactly what he looks like. And I know that Ewan Bremner doesn't really look like him, but that's fine. Like, I'm not bothered about that. It didn't bother me at all. Like, the way that the other guys, you know, some of them did, some of them didn't look like the people they're portraying. Fine, no problem. Oasis are so iconic. Those brothers, well, even the other guys as well, when they sort of came in onto the stage and King Tut's, I'm like, wait, which one's supposed to be Griggs? Which is that supposed to be Tony? His hair's not even curly. Like, you know, I was really kind of focused on that to the point that it sort of, it did take me out of it a bit. But I think they knew that. And so it became such a small part of it. It was almost like that's just the catalyst for then let's move on to the crazy success part. And they hardly had it really. They didn't really have anything. Like they would, and it was strange the way they were done. Like they would have them talking a little bit, but then they cut away or they wouldn't like focus on their face. You know what I mean? So you never really got a handle on Liam or Noel at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's the one bit you do actually hear Liam talk. It's only one scene, and he's talking to McGee, and he's going to wait. I remember it's taken from an interview. I think it's like an Ozone interview or something. Like the dialogue is, you know, no one's gonna you know, do it for you. You've got to go out and make it and all that sort of stuff. It's like it's Liam. Like they've obviously lifted the script from a Liam interview, and then he walks off, he goes, as you were, which is a little bit too meta for my liking. The Liam. Yeah, I mean, he didn't really get much to do. I thought the Noel was quite good, I've got to say. I think I thought, again, didn't look like him a lot, but I the bit when they're at, where they're in King Tut's and, you know, McGee has a conversation with him, you can, there's the humble part of Noel, you know, but also still quite cocky, you know, calm down, you're a bit too excited. I thought that was played quite well by the actor. I didn't like it when they do the bit at the Brit Awards because, for one, it looks so cheap. On the film, but also like they play hard and fast with, you know, sometimes it's footage of the time, you know, McGee and Noel going up to Downing Street. That's the actual footage, and then sometimes it's not. And you sort of think, well, maybe, you know, maybe that's the clip they have to pay for it to the Brits or something. But I thought they could have used the actual scene from the Brit Awards rather than pre-film it. And things like that kind of, yeah, do, as you say, do kind of take you out of it a little bit. But yeah, you're right. I guess because they're so iconic, I think it was judged quite well. You know, you couldn't not have them, but I think it was, I think it was pitched quite about right the way they had them. I mean, the one thing that got me about the film is how much they really didn't do anything with Screamadelica. You know, Screamadelica gets, they go on, this quite a large amount of time is about Acid House and Alan McGee moving to Manchester and stuff. But the actual album itself and the after effects of it, you know, for which what is one of the most recognised albums of all time, or sorry, the biggest albums of all time, as they say, is glossed over completely. So I think, I guess it's hard to cram everything in, isn't it? You know, throughout the entirety of the film. And if you then have too much about Oasis, that's what's going to take the headlines, isn't it? When it doesn't really deserve to, it is McGee's story. You know, it's everything else, I think. But if you overdo it with the Oasis too much, it's a fine balance, I guess, is what they have to do, what they have to go for. But plus, you know, we're geeks. We're never going to be happy, were we?
Absolutely. And I think that's the, like I was saying to someone, I mean, you know, maybe it is just because we're geeks and we want to know everything. Well, hence, you know, I'm on to like 152 episodes of the Oasis podcast. So, you know, that tells you everything about what I want about my, I've written two books.
I obsessively wrote a book about them, yeah, with every single detail I could find. Yeah.
Yeah. So we do like to dig into this stuff a little bit, you know, so maybe we're a little bit unusual in that regard. But I would have absolutely much preferred a 6-part Netflix series.
Yeah.
You know, I know that the whole point was, you know, let's get that speed and passion and you know, and like the anarchic nature of it, and let's just make it buzz. And, you know, you can't sit still and every 2 minutes is jumping to a different scene. I get that. And I get that that's a stylistic choice, but let's just have a bit more time with McGee growing up, you know, and him getting the shit kicked out of him. You know, let's get a bit more of build a relationship with the sister, build a relationship. Like you never really got into, you saw him with his sort of sweetheart and then, you know, his first wife. And then like you know, they said, oh, I'm pregnant, you know, but then you never saw anything else about his kids, you know, and maybe that was Alan's choice that he didn't really want to go into that. You know, he didn't want the film to go into that, but you know, it was very much like, I can imagine there could be like a scathing feminist reading of this about, you know, Bechdel tests and all that sort of stuff, that it's very much like a male film. You know, the yes. women in it are just sort of, you know, there's the one attractive woman that comes up to him and, you know, tries to pretend she doesn't know him, but then she actually knows all about creation. There's the journo asking him the questions. That's about it, isn't it? There's his sisters, there's his first girlfriend. So, you know, it's very much a boys making music, you know, being crazy. Yeah. Hey, isn't it? Isn't that great? Sort of that's ultimately what it's all about. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think if you do a Netflix series of 10 episodes or 6 episodes, whatever, then you can really delve into that stuff. You know, you could really break it down and have a whole episode on, you know, McGee and the issues with his family. You know, that would be fascinating. You know, all of this stuff. And then you could have a whole thing. That I loved that moment with the, you know, Kevin Shields in the studio and he's been locked out. And I remember that in the book that's, you know, that did apparently happen. I don't think it happened exactly like that. But, you know, that's a bloody episode. You know what I mean? Just on My Bloody Valentine and then the Primal Scream and all the drug stuff. You know, people have died, you know? So there's so much they could have gone into. But, you know, how do you cram it into a 2-hour film?
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be interesting to see that Danny Boyle, it's a series, isn't it? It's coming out, Pistol.
Yeah.
About Sex Pistols, obviously. I mean, that'll be interesting to see because if that can work, maybe that's something that will be done with creation further down the line. But yeah, I know what you mean. The Kevin Shields stuff, again, as I say, we're putting him quite glossed over, really. You know, Teenage Fan Club don't appear, you know, in it at all. Obviously we've got a lot of bandwagon-esque, you know, Ride aren't really there at all.
No.
There's Super Furry Animals. You know, there is loads of bands that aren't referenced at all, and there will be a lot more. But they, I mean, they do. There is a bit in the script when McGee talks about the relationship with his first wife and the child and stuff. He kind of, and it's kind of made out to be actually, you know, that he acknowledges that he's not ideal and he didn't handle that in the way that some people would like. But you know, that's life. But you're right; it doesn't really get. You don't go into too many much more detail about that. Yeah, the path that kind of led them to that. Yeah, it's a shame. Yeah, the creative license. I mean, what I did. It's a funny one because the attention to detail in like the design and the clothes and stuff is bang on. Is perfect. But they do take kind of certain liberties. And again, this is proper like geekdom coming out. But some of the timelines are off. You know, because there's the bit in the bank before McGee signs, before Screaming Delicate, before Acid House, and he's talking to the bank manager, and the bank manager's going on about, you know, comedy is the new rock and roll, Newman and Medea just sold out Wembley Arena, and it's like, well, that happened in about 1992, which was after Screaming Delicate. And similarly, Alan has his breakdown when Oasis are huge. We know that didn't happen then. Obviously, he missed everything, didn't he? Because he had his breakdown just after he signed, just after they signed. And stuff like that, and King Tut's is laid out very differently to how it's done in the as done in the film and stuff like that. But then again, but like I say, the outfits that McGee wears, you know, you remember him in those, you know, pork pie hats and those shades and that sort
definitely.
Of thing, and things like that. The attention to detail is on those sort of things is spot on.
I you know what? As soon as you started saying timelines, I thought Newman and Badil. That exactly. Yeah. As I was watching that. I went, hold on a minute. And yeah. Wait, what year are we in then? Because I'm sure Newman and Badil was like 92. And
might have been later than that, thinking about it.
Look down at my phone. Yeah. So the Mary Whitehouse Experience was like 90 and Newman and Badil was 92.
Okay.
And it's like, okay. So, but that was when the TV show was on. So yeah, selling out Wembley Arena would have probably been 93, 94. Mm. So yeah, I thought exactly that. But it must be that it was a bit in the book, but you know, a bit later on, not Screamadelica time. So, yeah.
I think it's creative license. Like there was a thing. I remember that has been referenced by people on more than one occasion about comedy being the new rock and roll and people using that example. It just wasn't necessarily in 1991 or 1990, whatever it's supposed to be. But that's that's a thing that people often frequent, those two selling out Wembley. But I suppose it's about the story, isn't it?
Yeah, and then sort of the ending is interesting because you have this, you know, the whole New Labour thing. And the Savile one threw me. I mean, like with everything else that we don't include, we do include Jimmy Savile, you know, and I mean, I suppose it was like that the whole point is, you know, he's, you know, you see earlier on him talking about Bobby's dad being a Labour councillor. Or a Labour campaigner, and him sort of thinking and talking about socialism and stuff, but then it's like, whoa, you see these guys in the suits, and there's Campbell, and there's Mandelson and Blair, and suddenly, hold on a minute, this isn't the Labour Party I was expecting it to be, which is, I get that, but then the whole Savile thing, it's like, wait, so you're saying not only are they horrendous, like, you know, because they shifted the Labour Party to the centre ground, and that's bad, but actually that they were also kind of, you know, responsible for this child molester getting more access to, you know what I mean? It just felt a bit creepy and a weird choice. Why include that?
Yeah, I suppose it's maybe it's a stylistic choice to fully represent Alan's disillusionment with New Labour, I guess. I think that is actually a thing. I think that did happen. I don't know if it was McGee who said that story, but I do remember hearing that Jimmy Savile was at Chequers, and it was kind of, people were appalled because it was an open secret in the sort of entertainment establishment of what he was doing. It does come from nowhere, I guess, but maybe to make it a little bit more bit more relevant, to maybe make it up to date. I don't know. Or like I say, maybe it's a narcissistic choice about the straw that breaks his back about his disillusion with New Labour. Because, you know, he spends more time in the film regretting aligning himself with New Labour as opposed to actually supporting them, doesn't he? About you now,
Tony Blair very cleverly used Creation Records as a great example of new labour.
It's a great company. You know, we should be really proud of it. Alan's just telling me started 12 years ago with a £1,000 bank loan and now has a turnover of 34 million. Now that's new labour. So
what you have to remember is everybody is spinning everybody. Nobody is leading here. There's too many good PR brains in the room for anybody to be spun.
And when New Labour won the election, it appeared to be win-win.
Everybody benefit. Creation got a huge amount of coverage. The Labour Party won the election. Everybody won. It put us very much onto the cultural agenda of the country. And my phone didn't stop ringing for 2 years.
In July 1997, Noel Gallagher and Alan McGee were invited to Downing Street in another PR coup for New Labour.
We arrived in a Rolls Royce and got chased up Downing Street by about 400 paparazzi. Went in and hung out for about 2 hours, got shown around the place. You name the drama,
and I'll play the part. We knew we were being used. We knew what the deal was. We knew that we were just part of a machine.
We get conned, but, I mean, what can you do? Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's like me and the rest of the country. Do you know what I mean, you know? I'm seeing the storyline
played out so many times before. I think the ultimate problem was that the curtain got pulled back and we saw the Wizard of Oz. We saw the fact that PR had played a major part in the election of New Labour. We saw the advent of spin. The magician revealed his tricks. And whenever you do that, whenever you put it in people's faces, they don't like it.
He does get the points in about the New Deal for musicians, though. That's interesting. Yeah. And every time I've done these things with McGee, when I've talked to him on the podcast, and then when I've done the live things, and that always comes up, you know, like the Tony Blair, do you regret the 10 Downing Street thing? That always, everything I've done with him, that comes up. And he always makes that point, you know, no, I influenced government policy and I created this New Deal for musicians that meant that, you know, unemployed musicians could get a grant to play music. I mean, that's incredible. Like in this time now, we're talking about zero-hours contracts and universal credit and stuff. Back then, McGee negotiated with the Labour government to get a deal for unemployed musicians to get a grant. I mean,
yeah,
that's amazing. You know, that's an incredible thing. And I was pleased that, you know, that I imagine that was something that he fought to make sure was in there, because, you know, that's, as I say, I think that's his key takeaway from that whole period, that yes, you know, I did get, you know, maybe used by them in the wrong way, but actually, you know, there were a lot of good came out of it.
Yeah, it was potentially worth it for that. It was, and because, you know, it wasn't about him. You know, it was a good positive outcome. You know, from yeah, his being able to change policy. I mean, you know, I don't imagine Ross Kemp, who was one of the other people that was at Downing Street, had such a sway, did he, with policy decisions?
No, absolutely.
For example.
So all in all, I mean, I, as I say, like, final thoughts on it, really enjoyed it. For the 2 hours it was on, I really enjoyed it. Like, and as I say, I'm happily rewatch it. I think it'll, like, you know, I'll get it when it comes on DVD, and I think it's a really cool one. I, you know, I think that the, you know, just as a film, like, if it was just a fiction, you know, and it wasn't about the characters I knew, you know, I would have really enjoyed it just as that. And I love music films, so that's sort of cool. And sort of covering the greatest scene was with Jason Isaacs when they're going around LA, and just his complete breakdown. And the Jason Isaacs just steals the show. I think that was the key thing for me here, how brilliant Jason Isaacs was in that scene, as he's this, like, you know, really over the top, chewing the scenery. But I thought he was absolutely brilliant. So, you know, yeah, really well acted, good fun, lots of great cameos. The Oasis thing, if you're an Oasis, obviously listen to this, you're an Oasis fan, don't go in expecting much from the Oasis stuff. This is, for an Alan McGee film, you know, and Oasis do make up quite a bit of the trailer, but it's a couple of minutes in the film and they don't really do that much with them. So it really is just like, oh, I've seen Oasis at King Tut's, bam, now I'm rich and we're into the, you know, the drug years and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, but generally, all in all, I thought, yeah, really, really good piece of work.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, it's and obviously what a soundtrack. Very entertaining, well acted, good script. I think, yeah, Urban Welsh is kind of, it's very fast paced. A whole lot of fun and supremely entertaining, which is ultimately all it's supposed to be, isn't it?
Good. Wonderful. All right, there we go. We're like the Mayo and Kermode of
we approve, so it's fine.
We're not in control. You got so many people that love you. I just want you to get better at it.
Bilbo told me you are killing the music business.
I make things happen.
Be a punk. Be a rebel always. There's always something to rebel for.
What is this film? A documentary?
No, it's a biopic. Forrest Gump meets Boys in the Hood.
So thank you very much for listening today. That'll do it for us. Thank you to Richard for stopping by and chatting news and creation stories. And make sure you come back for a future episode where we will be talking a lot about The Verve, which is a really, really good chat. And I'm really looking forward to you guys hearing it. You can check out Creation Stories. It's on Sky Cinema right now, or Now TV if you haven't got Sky Cinema. And as I said in the thing, it's really definitely worth checking out. So make sure you do. All right. Thank you very much for listening to the Oasis podcast. But as always, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is, and it's greatly, greatly appreciated. I think I said last episode that I was on 99 patrons. That's actually now jumped up to 105. So thank you very much to Keith, Mark, Dave, Jamie, Sean, and Ian. Ian also made a one-off donation, which was very, very much appreciated. So thank you very much, guys. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod, which is where we post additional articles. The episodes go up there early, bonus episodes occasionally. And you can also get access to the exclusive Oasis Podcast Patreon Discord, which is where a lot of discussion goes on over there, and that's really, really worth joining. And I think in the last episode, I just announced a show with McGee, a live event with McGee on Friday, 21st of May. It had sold out before we'd even released the episode talking about it. A second day was announced for Saturday the 22nd, and that sold out as well very quickly. These shows are only limited seats, like 40 odd tickets, so they're pretty small. So those are sold out well. So yeah, let's hopefully do some more stuff later in the year when lockdown lifts a little bit, shall we? Do please write a review on iTunes. That's always greatly appreciated. And give us a follow on social media, Oasis Podcast on Twitter and Facebook, and Oasis Pod on Instagram. And you can always email me, oasispod@gmail.com. And it would be great to hear from you. We've got an upcoming episode coming with Katie Georgiou, who you know, who does Sound Effects Podcast. And we're going to be looking at Oasis and mental health, the music of Oasis and how it can affect your mental health. So we've already had some really great audio messages and emails and things from people talking about the difference Oasis made to their life. So if you've got a particular story, then do get in touch with myself at Oasis Podcast or oasispod@gmail.com, or Katie, who is at Sound Effects Pod, Sound Affect, AFFECTS Pod on Twitter. And that should be a really, really exciting episode. You know, Katie is a mental health professional, so it's so it should be really good. All right, that'll do it for today. Thank you very much for listening. Stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.